This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Green Tea CR Phytosome Formula from Purity Products. It's the power of three of nature's top superfoods, a clinically tested green tea plus curcumin and resveratrol, all in one simple capsule. It's clinically proven to support your energy, vitality, and cardiovascular function. The secret behind Green Tea CR is its phytosome matrix, which boosts its green tea power by over 200% compared to regular green tea. Our friends at Purity Products have a free bottle for you to put to the test. Just pay $4.95 for shipping. Experience the power of this trio and see how good you can feel. Call 1-800-218-6030. That's 1-800-218-6030. Call now. As these move fast, dial 1-800-218-6030. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and here we are once again. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla as we weather. And, weather is a big factor. Weather January here in New York. What was it like? It was single digits yesterday.
Brr. I wore two hats.
You wore two hats.
I wore two hats to go out and get my groceries, yes.
Yeah. And I pulled out the mittens because keeping the fingers together is a little better strategy than... You know, having individually wrapped fingers. So got the mittens out, took a little, it was my sort of partial day off. So I took a little hike over to the Museum of Modern Art, MoMA, here in Manhattan. And it was like nobody's on the streets, but everybody was congregated inside, in the warmth of the MoMA.
Yeah.
Looking at modern art, getting some color therapy. So before we get to questions, by the way, radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com. We thank you because we have a lot of good questions this week to go over. But before we do that, I want to talk about the big news, and it has to do with the Lancet report published last week. The Eat Lancet Commission on Healthy Diets from Sustainable Food Systems. Why do you say uh-oh? Because, I say uh-oh.
Sustainable food is not going to necessarily equal healthy eating.
Thank you. Because it is a linkage of two agendas. Mm-hmm. One is to get us to eat healthy.
Yep.
And the other is to save the planet.
Yeah.
Now, if we had had those folks around, the Lancet Commission, in, say, 500,000 BC, we would still have woolly mammoths, we would still have mastodons, we would still have a lot of these, giant animals that humans obliterated during the a great extinction of large mammals. Why? Because the way we're designed... is our brains and our bodies get a very efficient source of A, fuel, and B, protein, and C, multiple nutrients from animal protein. It's just
from
a biological
protein.
Fact. We can't divorce ourselves from the biological fact.
That's true.
So now we're linking this to planetary survival. What they're saying is that animals, you have these, we're clearing the Amazon rainforest to make hamburgers that we sell to McDonald's. And we are devastating the ecosystem, and there's these, swine poop lagoons, of these industrial farms that are devastating the environment, and on it goes. And if we were simply to raise, fruits and vegetables, it would be less of an environmental cost. And besides, those things are healthy because fat is bad, excess protein is bad, saturated fat is bad.
Oh my.
What say you, Layla? I mean, you're the nutritionist.
Well, there go our brains, there go our immune systems, there goes our muscle health, our bone health, the ability to think clearly. We will lose a lot of hair. And you know what, Dr. Hoffman? We will lose sex drives.
Okay. This is actually a good theme of what we're going to be presenting at the Integrative Health Symposium.
Yes.
Which is... that
there were reform efforts to reform the American diet, which was laden with meat in the 19th century. American farmers would have massive amounts of salted pork and beef and lots of dairy, and they worked hard, and then they would come in and have this massive breakfast, and yes, they would have grains, but the reform effort was undertaken by John Harvey Kellogg, who was a bit of a nut. Frankly, he was a religious zealot, and he also was into that sort of Victorian thing about hyperexcitation of the senses, and we want to calm down the libido because of licentiousness and masturbation and all this stuff.
They were kind of prudish.
Yeah, and they said, you know, we should be eating grains. So what better form of grains than to, you know, take grains and to process them into cereal? And you have Kellogg's cereal, and by the way, there was a guy named Post who was also into this movement. And it wasn't just it was another linkage between ideology and quote, diet science, which is, you know, stay away from these excitatory foods and eat a very plant-based diet. And that's still alive in according to many vegans, they believe that it's better for the soul, that it is...
It lowers their fertility.
Helps the planet that way.
There was a study of young men several years ago. Those who were vegan had lower sperm counts. Yeah. All that tofu and...
So they asked a bunch of experts, but many of these experts have sort of hidden agendas or overt agendas. Some of them are in the food industry where they're coming up with meat substitutes that are soy-based, that, you know, this is going to be a whole new movement, is to try and get away from meat as we know it and get towards synthetic products, even like cloned, you know, stem cell products, you know, that are grown on some sort of matrix, like, here's your spare ribs, but they're actually, you know, grown in a vat with some genetically engineered cells that adhere to a some sort of matrix that, you know, resembles a rib, you know, a spare rib. Mm-hmm. That's coming. That's a technology that's going to be very lucrative. Mm-hmm. And
cloning salmon.
So if you get a directive from a major academic journal, you know, doctors, researchers, food experts, and you get a consensus, there's a big economic opportunity there for synthetic meat and alternative vegetarian protein substitutes. That's part of the problem with this. I just see that it's kind of one of these top-down directives that you know, ostensibly is for the good of mankind, but will centralize, further and further centralize food production, these big industrial conglomerates. It's not about individual quality farmers.
Right. Imagine that instead of bread lines, there will be Soylent lines.
Reminds me of Soylent Green. This is, again, this has been proven wrong again and again, this sort of Malthusian theory. You know, a guy named Malthus came up with this idea that, you know, the Earth's population, he did this, you know, the math, and the Earth's population is going to triple and quadruple, and we're going to run out of resources. And then in the 1970s, we had movies like Soylent Green, where basically you took people and you threw them into a vat like a big meat grinder, and you produced this food called Soylent Green, but it was, you're eating people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Cannibalism.
So, but here we are, it's sort of like the modern guise of this Soylent Green mentality of limited resources. You know, meanwhile, I think Americans are eating more and more calories than ever. There's more and more food. And you know what's amazing? I think food is super cheap in America. I went to Europe, and food is more expensive there. There's more taxes. Yeah. It's relatively expensive. People make less money. Here, people make a ton of money relative to the rest of the world. And food is relatively cheap. I mean, you can fill a supermarket basket, you know, for a family for $50, $60, $75. That's a lot of money, but it's not like there's more overnutrition than starvation in this country.
That's true. And what's ironic is the overnutrition often is the source of deficiencies, because they're filling up on empty calories.
They're filling up on also subsidized things, because, you know, if the government really follows these guidelines, we're going to continue with subsidies for soy, for wheat, for corn, not for meat, because meat will be discouraged. Maybe taxed. There may be a meat tax.
Meat tax, like a sin tax on soft drinks and
they are encouraging reduction in sugar consumption, but you know, some of these numbers are really ridiculous. They suggest 7 ounces of beef protein per day, which means, well, you can wait, you know, you can have beef like once a month and you'll have something that's the equivalent of a decent sized hamburger. Or grams.
I was going to say, that's
7 grams.
That's 2-3.5 ounce servings. That's pretty good.
Think of your fish oil pills. Mm-hmm. They're a gram. Mm-hmm. So the amount of meat you're entitled to have is 7 fish oil pills worth of meat. That's barely worth bothering.
No, you know, why bother?
That's about as much as, you know, you can get out of your teeth with dental floss.
Right.
And it's
after chewing on some spare ribs.
I did the math. It's about 1/20th of a quarter pounder hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's nothing.
It is nothing.
So they're basically saying prohibition on beef.
Right.
Have less chicken, mm-hmm. but a little more chicken. Have some fish, mm-hmm. not too much, but lots and lots of vegetables, you know, fruits and vegetables, and get protein from soy.
From soy, whole grains. Legumes,
beans.
I think a lot of people, because they will eventually get bored eating that way, are going to turn to more processed foods anyway.
Right.
There's no satiety when you're eating simply grains and vegetables and fruits.
This is also very low fat.
Yes. Oh, well, forget it. Then our brains are going to suffer. Our moods are going to get worse.
And we're also going to crave carbs.
Yes, we're going to crave carbs. Because it will be a heavily plant-based diet, there will be a lot of carbohydrate craving.
Spearheading this is one guy who is considered the preeminent nutritionist in America, Walter Willett. Out of Harvard. And, mm-hmm. you know, the nice thing about him is he's the guy who basically came down on trans fats mm-hmm. and pointed out the hazards of trans fats. It's largely due to his efforts that trans fats have been virtually banned from the U.S. food supply. Good for him. But he also is very heavily biased towards a plant-based model mm-hmm. of eating. And he, you know, his influence is seen in this, along with, you know, other scientists who come from that ethos, because really it's an ethos rather than this is not rocket science yet. We don't know precisely what the ideal human diet is for everyone.
That's true.
And then we're going to dictate it. We're going to make it so that, you know, mm-hmm. we have a world where our choices will be really limited.
Hmm. That's kind of socialist.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it goes with a command and control economy.
Yes.
You know, where there's a lot of government direction of, mm-hmm. you know, your choices.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate, in my opinion. Yeah.
You know, and, you know, we can say, you know, is this to the left, to the right? I mean, I find that... I lean more towards a libertarian view of things.
Yes.
As I think do you.
I do. Classical libertarian, yes.
But classical libertarians are not like, you know, neocons or right-wingers. They're not all about big military spending and, you know, government initiatives. They're more about small government.
Yes.
And, you know, the ingenuity that private individuals can harness.
Yeah, absolutely.
And choice.
Individual liberties, smaller government, all of that. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, libertarians are even for legalization of pot, you know, mm-hmm. things like that, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a trend. I mean, the backlash against this mm-hmm. on Twitter and on Facebook and the social media was instantaneous and huge. From a lot of my colleagues in the field of nutrition, they... like us, feel that this is a real rush to judgment.
Mm-hmm. It is. And the data doesn't bear out everything. So a vegan type diet, which, could be sustainable for the planet, is not necessarily sustainable for human life, or at least with regard to the attainment of optimal health. So that is a big problem.
I mean, you see comments like this in response to an article that was critical of this. Spectacular destruction of the pseudoscience of Willett and his cronies.
Hmm.
You're a beacon shining through the darkness cast by plant-loving diet dictocrats. Diet dictocrats, I like that. So this was so well done, a thoughtful, pointed, and well-deserved skewering of the Eat Lancet decree from on high. Government should not be involved, but of course they will be pushed in by special interests.
Right. Right.
You know.
And it's the special interests to be concerned about. I mean, isn't Bill Gates one of the people spearheading this type of diet for the planet, being more sustainable? The use of soy more often than, or plant-based proteins than...
There's nothing better than being a multi-billionaire than graduating from actually doing work to working to control the health and the direction of the planet.
Yeah.
Because you can only do so much making a lot of money, but then you can take that money and you can shape the destiny of mankind. And I think that's real hubris.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Very scary. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so these are our reactions to that. And, you know, I might write a more detailed piece, or you might be inspired to write a more detailed piece, but a lot of people have written very good pieces on that. Maybe we'll list them for our audience. And, you know, and by the way, just a nod to our vegan and vegetarian listeners.
Yeah.
That's a program that could work very well for you and for many people.
Yes.
It is a way to go, but it's just like not the capital T way to go.
Right, right. And that's what needs to be realized. Individual biochemistries, individuals, one diet does not fit all. That should really answer that question.
Yep.
Unfortunately, it doesn't. And the question is asked again and again and answered in a wrongful way, like that.
Okay, yeah. So let's move on to questions, because we've called people's attention to this.
Yeah. We have an email from Isabel. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I'm planning a trip to Europe soon, and the flight will take more than 8 hours.
Been there, done that.
That's a long flight.
Yeah.
As you know, sitting for such a long time can wreak havoc with one's body.
Yeah.
Can you recommend taking any specific supplements before, during, or after the flight to help prevent blood clots, muscle aches, respiratory problems, jet lag?
Well, absolutely. Pycnogenol should be on the list, because it's actually, in scientific studies, it's been demonstrated to be helpful for preventing blood clots. So take pycnogenol, one capsule twice daily of, I think, 50 milligram or 100 milligram pycnogenol.
That can be helpful.
Helps with circulation. It's difficult to sit around, you know, make sure you hydrate. Make sure you don't eat too much. Make sure you don't drink too much.
It is the most dehydrating environment on an airplane.
Because it's like, it's the equivalent
to... You should probably consume a glass of water every hour and a half.
Yeah, it's dry, and it's equivalent to being in a, in a ski chalet, because it's altitude.
Yeah.
And now with some of the newer planes, they have the ability to keep the cabin pressure at a lower altitude because of what they actually do. Since there's, you know, when you're high up, the plane expands, so you have to have rigid body on the plane. Otherwise, the pressure inside would cause the plane to explode. Mm. So, with the new planes, they're made out of carbon fiber that expands, that gives more, so you can keep the pressure higher inside instead of lowering it to the equivalent of like 12,000 feet. Maybe you can lower it to maybe Denver level.
Wow,
which is 6,000 feet.
Wow, that's significant.
So other things that you can take, I mean, certainly take antioxidants, because antioxidants may help you. You're getting a dose of rays. You know, I encourage people, we've had some patients who are airline pilots and airline personnel, and, they get high rates of cancer from flying. So your limited exposure during one flight, that's not equivalent to a lifetime of exposure.
That's true.
But that would be important. With this melatonin strategy, I've got to say, I have tried it and it doesn't work that well.
Oh, okay. Like arriving, and that strategy is arriving to your destination and taking melatonin that evening to go to sleep.
Like what you could even do is you can anticipate where you're going and take melatonin. So, for example, you're going to Europe, it's, you know, 11 o'clock at night when it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So you could begin for a couple of days to take melatonin in the afternoon, start to accustom your body to a melatonin surge later. I got to say that the studies, you know, were very tantalizing a few years ago. I haven't seen any really good studies that amplify or validate that lately about reducing the risk of jet lag. I mean, one strategy that people employ is they try to stay up that first day when they go east. It's very hard to do because you're really tired. You maybe not have slept hardly at all on the plane. You know, the real professional travelers, as soon as the plane taxis, they're asleep at 7. I don't know what they do. Maybe they take an Ambien or something. Then they're more on European time because they go to bed earlier, the equivalent of European time. I'm usually so excited when I go over there that I get like 2-3 hours of sleep. And it's hard to sleep in a, you know, in a coach seat. And it's hard to sleep even in a first class, you know, seat on a plane.
Yeah.
You know, that helps you, that enables you to recline like a recliner bed.
Mm-hmm.
The main thing, I think just avoid alcohol. They really try to ply you with alcohol.
That'll really dehydrate you even further.
It'll also throw your body off. You'll feel toxic.
It throws your body off. It throws off your sleep. It doesn't help with any muscle aches.
Yeah. No.
That you may experience.
It may numb you out.
Yeah.
But there's so many episodes. I think people simultaneously take some kind of sleeping pill and they drink. And then they do crazy things. Like they get it, stand up and they pull their pants down. They urinate or they try to jump out of the plane. You know, they rush for the exits.
No.
Or they...
One potentiates the other.
They get completely disinhibited.
Yeah.
And whatever's going on with them, they just go nuts.
Oh, no.
You know, it happens so often. Usually these people have a combination of drugs and alcohol. It's
makes for a fun plane ride, folks.
I have a colleague, you know, she's been a guest, you know, Dr. Dana Cohen. And she said she had a most peculiar trip because she had to, she was involved in restraining one passenger going out to a conference. And then on the return trip, it happened again with another passenger.
Oh, for crying out loud. It shouldn't happen twice to one person on
like
the same trip.
That's like lightning striking twice. I mean, it's so prevalent that it, you know.
Yeah.
I never got called upon to help with that kind of situation. Yeah. But that's something that I kind of dread.
Yeah.
Is, you know, somebody just going off on a plane.
Yeah.
So, you know.
The other thing for respiratory problems, I know people that fly, even if they're taking a little jumper from, say, New York to Boston, an hour and a half or something, they wind up with a cold or they get sick or something happens. Take some NAC, make NAC, N-acetylcysteine, part of your everyday.
Some additional vitamin C, perhaps.
Yeah. It's also good for lung health.
Make sure that you have adequate vitamin D before you go, because vitamin D is, I think, as important or if not more important than C for preventing infections.
Yeah. Maybe some additional magnesium for the muscle aches. It's also
take along some probiotics, some Dr. O'Hara's maybe, because you know there's the likelihood of food poisoning when you're eating out is higher.
Traveler's diarrhea. The microbiota is different where you're going, and so forth and so on, where your food comes from, as well. So you're not recommending people pop an enteric-coated baby aspirin before they get on the plane.
Well,
Pycnogenol is better.
If you have a history of blood clots, you got to. You probably are on it anyway, but you could take a baby aspirin prior to going on the plane. I don't, you know, but I've never had a blood clot before, and I take Pycnogenol regularly.
All right.
But man, if you get off the plane and you feel like, oh, I've got a real pain in my calf, it's really hurting, check it out. Because that's not just, it may be a little bothersome, but that's life-threatening.
Yes.
You got to get checked out.
Thrombosis.
Deep vein thrombosis, because the blood clot can migrate into your lungs. You can get a pulmonary embolus.
Would natokinase or things like the enzymes, Wobenzyme, Vascuzyme, they can help as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So regular users of
but
those.
But the one that's been studied for this, for economy class syndrome, is Pycnogenol. It's actually been, there's a study, you can look it up.
What about for business class syndrome? Oh,
the business class syndrome, you only take half as much.
Okay. Isabel, thank you for that very thoughtful question. Good luck on your flight. Have fun wherever
business,
you're going.
I couldn't believe how much booze they were consuming in business class. It was like nonstop. The booze wagon was going. I figure, why pay, you know, another like $500 so you could drink as much booze as you want?
Is that what it is in business class? I thought that was first class, that they just bring it to you.
Business class is sort of like quasi first class.
Yeah.
I mean, don't ask me because I'm not an expert on it. I think I once used points to be in the, like, use the sleeper bed on the way to Europe. It was nice, but it wasn't 100%.
It wasn't. Were you able to sleep?
Yeah, I had like I used like a million points or something.
Oh, you know? Okay. You know, need that many points for that much.
I blew away all my points.
Okay. We have an email from Dan. Dan writes, "My sister is a senior citizen and has been afflicted with handshakes for a couple of years. Her doctor said it's not Parkinson's, but a condition called essential tremor or something like that."
Okay, I'm going to just cut that short because there, as long as it's not Parkinson's, there is no, in my mind, treatment for that.
Mm.
Antioxidants don't help. All the brain nutrients in the world don't help. Magnesium doesn't help. There's one thing that helps, and that's have a drink. And I'm just being facetious because alcohol, the one of the ways you diagnose this is your hand steadies when you take a little bit of alcohol.
Oh.
So, so, but it's a relatively benign condition. It's bothersome. The future of that is that they do actually have a deep brain stimulation that seems to be able to reverse that. That's coming. That may be the treatment of choice for that condition in a few years once they've perfected it.
Is this essential tremor something similar to what Katharine Hepburn had? She always had like this...
A head bobbing thing,
A head bobbing, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know whether it morphed into more severe neurological disease.
Yeah, so Dan, there is no supplement, there isn't anything like
that. I wish I could tell you, but I'm just being quite honest here, and if anybody knows of anything that is a surefire, we have a lot of clinicians who listen, and maybe they know of any...
Oh gosh, let us know.
Let us know, because there's it is... You know, look, it's a feature of aging. It is absolutely a feature of aging.
Yeah.
And it causes some people who do... you know, who are, you know, Swiss watch repair people and microsurgeons, causes them sometimes to take retirement. It's also, to some extent, familial, familial tremor. But it's an age.
It could be caused by too much caffeine, but I'm assuming that's not the problem here.
Nervousness, I mean.
Yeah, you know. That kind of a thing. But, okay. Thank you, Dan. Best of luck to your sister.
Let's pause because we divide these podcasts into two parts.
Wow.
And we're at the end of our time allocation for part one. So flip the LP over and start with part two. And in part two, what questions are we going to take up?
We have two questions about TSH. Is this TSH normal?
Okay. Talking about thyroid, I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin. She's our nutritionist in residence. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions for our weekly Q&A with Layla. This is Intelligent Medicine.